All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and our first guest on the show today is Max Blumenthal. He's the author of Republican Gamora, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party, which is a New York Times and LA Times bestseller. He's written for the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Daily Beast, the Nation, the Huffington Post, Salon.com, Al Jazeera English, and is a writing fellow for the Nation Institute. Welcome back to the show, Max. How are you doing, man?
Pretty good. It's great to be on.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us today. And I don't know if I ever got a chance to tell you this, but I learned so much about the different power factions at the highest level inside the Republican Party in the Bush years from reading your dad's pieces, Sidney Blumenthal, your father, at Salon.com. James Baker turned to his friend on the couch after George Bush gave his 48-hour speech right before the invasion of Iraq, and Baker said to his friend, your father's source, I guess, I told him not to do that, and he just went, he had so many pieces that just explored in such detail the split between, you know, I guess to be very general about it, the Winnep side, the Winnep crew, and the Council on Foreign Relations set, the State Department guys versus the Rumsfeld's neocons and the Cheney network and that kind of thing. But anyway, fascinating stuff. I always, for years and years, I learned a hell of a lot reading those pieces of Salon.com, so I just wanted to pass that on to you for some reason.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd really appreciate that, and, you know, your listeners can get all of his pieces in a collection called How Bush Rules and another collection called The Strange Death of Republican America. I'm sure they're 50 cents on Amazon now, and it's a good antidote to Bush's pack of lies in his autobiography.
Yeah, great. I didn't realize that those articles were collected. I know that if people just search Sidney Blumenthal and James Baker on Salon.com, they'll find some very interesting stuff there. But anyway, I don't want to get too far down that rabbit trail, although it does go to the point that like your father, are an expert in Republican politics. And, you know, your latest piece here at Tom Dispatch and, of course, then therefore at antiwar.com is called The Great Fear. And this is such an important piece, especially, I think, as we round up, finish off the year here, finish off the first decade of the 21st century. And especially as this morning, there's a headline on antiwar.com, counterterrorism expert tells cops, kill militant Muslims, quote, including children.
Right.
And this quote is from a man named Waleed Shubat, a self-described former PLO terrorist. It says at Raw Story, who is Waleed Shubat? He features in your article, The Great Fear, at TomDispatch.com as well.
Yeah, Waleed Shubat is one of many self-proclaimed terror experts who are consulting for American law enforcement, including local and federal law enforcement agencies, and he's a fraud. He was exposed as a fraud actually by the Jerusalem Post, which is a right-leaning newspaper in Israel. And I wrote about Shubat because he appeared as a character in a film called Obsession, which is an Islamophobic propaganda film, which was distributed in newspapers, sort of like slipped into newspapers in 2008 in swing states across the U.S. And the film, we're still not sure exactly who funded these 28 million DVDs that were sent out apparently to demonize not just Muslims, but to suggest that Barack Obama was a crypto-Muslim. And Shubat appears in the film declaring that a secular dogma like Nazism is less dangerous than is Islamofascism today. So I guess Auschwitz 2.0 must be right around the corner if he's right. He's called Islam a satanic cult, and he claims that his expertise comes from being a former terrorist for the PLO. But it turns out that the PLO has no record of him ever being involved with them. The FBI has no record of him being a terrorist, and he's just a fraud. So that's just part of the broader phenomenon we're facing now.
Well, it's part of that broader narrative that the enemy here, even if sometimes you can hear from this most crazy part of the right wing that Maybe it's not all Islam. They'll sort of give a little bit of lip service to that. But the enemy is radical Islam, as though the motive for the September 11th attack, which is at the bottom line here, was radical Islam, rather than American support for Israel, the American occupation of Saudi Arabia, the blockade against Iraq, etc., etc. So it's part of that big lie ever since 9/11 that Islam has hell to do with the motive whatsoever here.
There's no denying that, in my opinion, I have no problem saying that I completely object to political Islam the same way I object to political Judaism or political Christianity. The problem is it isn't really a factor in the United States. It might be in Europe. I'm not an expert. It certainly is in the Middle East. But it's not a factor here, and there are no terror cells, Muslim terror cells in the United States. There is no evidence of it. And the only terror plots that have been busted in the last few months or years were fabricated by the FBI by entrapping vulnerable Muslim youth. So what's going on here is we're running an empire. We're at war in two Muslim countries, and Americans need to believe that there's some domestic reason that we have to be fighting radical Islam thousands of miles away. So it's really convenient to prop up this network consisting of hucksters like Waleed Shobat and their incitements against Muslims in the United States, and present it as fact when in fact it's really a fantasy.
It's sort of the modern version of, well, we'd all be speaking German right now, that kind of thing. There has to be, we have to believe that we're fighting on the defensive as we wage these occupations.
I saw Mitt Romney saying that. I saw him to say that at a CPAC, the big conservative gathering in 2007. He said, if we didn't, fight World War II, we'd all be speaking German right now. And if we weren't in Iraq, we'd all be speaking Farsi, or our grandchildren would be speaking Farsi. And he said that. And you can expect him to say it again. And what I point out in my piece is that this sort of rhetoric germinated from a small, mostly locally based network of anti-Muslim fanatics. And it's moved up the food chain all the way to Fox News. And Republican presidential frontrunners are echoing this rhetoric. And Mitt Romney, who is sort of a cardboard man in a suit, who has no authentic appeal among the Republican base, and especially among the Tea Party, is going to be doing the best he can to parrot this rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. All right, it's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Max Blumenthal. And you guys know how it works at Tom Dispatch. It's sort of always a kind of little miniature introduction essay by Tom before his guest columnist. And so at antiwar.com, you go to antiwar.com/Englehart, and you get all of those Tom Dispatch pieces with his kind of two titles. It's The Great Fear by Tom Englehart, and then lower, The Great Islamophobic Crusade. And Max, you write in here that August 2010, Pew Research Center poll revealed that among Americans, the favorability rating of Muslims had dropped by 11 points since 2005. So the further we get from 9/11, the more scared of Muslims we are, I guess, huh?
Right, right. That's the funny thing about this whole campaign, is that you would think that Americans would have reacted right away to the attacks of 9/11 by turning completely against the Muslims in their midst. And there were some attacks on Sikhs who aren't Muslim, but who wear turbans on their head at gas stations. But we didn't see that. We only saw this spasm of anti-Muslim bigotry explode and reach critical mass with the announcement of plans for construction of a Islamic community center at Ground Zero.
Right, then it came from the top. All right, hold it right there, Max. We'll be right back, everybody, with Max Blumenthal after this. Man, it sure is a good thing the United States never stops invading the world. Otherwise, the Islamo-fascist caliphate would enslave us all under Sharia law and put gays in the military and stuff. I heard that on the radio, and now I'm really frightened. Max Blumenthal has a piece, though, at Tom Dispatch and at original.antiwar.com/Englehart called The Great Fear, The Great Islamophobic Crusade. And he makes the case in here that, no, actually, there's a very small number of people who are distributing this fear. I guess we were talking before the break, Max, about how the American people didn't really, you know, overreact. George Bush actually, as many people as he killed, said, hey, we're not at war with Islam. This is just this group of people who've twisted and perverted it and whatever like that, but it's not everybody, and there are brothers and all those kinds of things. But there's been, you report here, a very small group of people who have really just pushed this narrative and now successfully, I guess.
Yeah, so under Bush, they pushed it on a local level, waiting for an opportunity like the one they had with the Ground Zero Islamic Community Center, Park 51, to come about so they can push it on the national stage. And another factor in their ability to bring this campaign to the national level was that, as you said, Bush sort of denounced Islamophobia and showed the power of the bully pulpit. But Obama hasn't been able to denounce it, in part because he's been a target of this campaign. And so Obama taking office has really been the trigger for Republican frontrunners to echo the rhetoric that we've been hearing in the far right, in the grassroots, because it actually benefits them by attacking American Muslims. It's a subtle way of saying Barack Obama is not capable of standing up to terrorism because he's one of them. So we saw this campaign really start after 9/11 on campuses. And it wasn't about Muslims. It was about the Israel-Palestine debate. At least that's what I was able to tell through my research, to determine through my research. At Columbia University, a Palestinian professor named Joseph Massad, who's a strong critic of Israel, was seeking tenure. And the Israel lobby was incredibly worried about Palestinian solidarity organizing on campus. So all the major groups of the Israel lobby, AIPAC, the ADL, the AJC, formed a group called the David Project, which was funded by a multimillionaire from Los Angeles named Aubrey Chernick, who I found is funding almost this entire network, including Waleed Shobat, who we mentioned earlier. And Chernick runs a security firm, so it makes sense that he would want to gin up a fear of Islam, radical Islam in the United States. He's also a former trustee of WINEF, the think tank of AIPAC. The David Project leader, I should correct myself, has received funding from Chernick. So they tried to take back the campus by attacking professors like Massad. They failed, but what they did was they started building the network. Then the next thing that happened was Charles Jacobs, the director of this group formed by the Israel lobby, the student group, the David Project, moved into Boston, where plans were announced to build an Islamic community center in Roxbury, an inner-city neighborhood. And Jacob started going to local synagogues and working behind the scenes with fake terror experts like Stephen Emerson, working local right-wing media like the Boston Herald and the local Fox affiliate, and feeding them stories about how this mosque had secret ties to Wahhabi elements and the Muslim Brotherhood, which turned out to be completely false. And again, they failed. The Islamic Community Center was built. Nothing happened. There was no terrorism. But steadily, they built this network up and moved into the next city and moved into New York for more campaigns and moved into other cities across the U.S. And bizarre fanatics like Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer slowly moved into the fray, and the network grew not just in its manpower, but in the intensity and insanity of its rhetoric.
Well, tell me a little bit about Pamela Geller. Who is she?
Yeah, it's hard to really know who this person is. She seems to be a complete sociopath. She was for years an associate publisher of the New York Observer, and she formed a blog called Atlas Shrugs, which just basically as an outlet for her hysterically racist views about Muslims, who she calls Nazis on a routine basis, and she's called me a capo for criticizing her, and a capo is a Jew who assists the Nazis in the concentration camp. And that's what she calls liberal Jews in general. So that's the level of discourse we hear from Pam Geller, she supports herself off of a divorce settlement. This is the interesting part. She supports herself off of a divorce settlement from her husband, Michael Oshry, who co-owned a car dealership with her in Long Island. And Oshry had been indicted a year before he died in 2007 for larceny because he was accused by prosecutors of running a $1 million scam where cars were sold to straw buyers with good credit who were buying cars for gangsters and criminals and members of the mafia who couldn't buy cars themselves. Geller was the co-owner, and the prosecutor said both owners knew all about this scheme. Somehow two cops were killed in connection with this scheme, and a car dealer was killed as well. Then Geller divorced this guy, got his money. He died, and she got millions in life insurance from him as well. And that's how she supports her full-time blogging. And somehow she gained advance notice of the plans to build this Islamic community center. This was back in 2009, before anyone was talking about it. And she began blogging hysterically about it until people like Sarah Palin, who called for moderate Muslims to repudiate this mosque, basically making up her own word, repudiate the Islamic Community Center. And Newt Gingrich, who compared the construction of this community center to building a Nazi sign near the U.S. Holocaust Museum on the National Mall, until they noticed. And then Pamela Geller was getting 4,000-word profiles in the New York Times, and she was being hosted on Fox News by Mike Huckabee, and she became sort of a national figure in the face of this Islamophobic network that I wrote about for Tom Dispatch.
Well, now, it's not the 1930s right now or anything, but then again, you know, we got a pretty, you know, at least little F fascist system at permanent war over here, and some of these things really are shades of you know, the history of the last century. And you talk in here about this lady Geller's alliance with a man named Andrew Gravers, who I understand is basically an outright neo-fascist in Europe, right?
Yeah, now this is one of the unusual or frightening parts, because Geller's Jewish. She talks about being Jewish a lot, although her sister has said that her family only practiced fashion show Judaism. And, you know, Geller's a pro-Israel fanatic, but she's only been there for two brief trips. So I don't think she really knows the country very well and probably wouldn't like it very much. Her key allies, and this is increasingly the case for Israel as well, her key allies are European neo-fascists like Anders Gravers, who's a Danish Islamophobe who's just been arrested repeatedly for sociopathic behavior around mosques. But even worse than that is her connection to the English Defense League, which is basically a gang of street unreconstructed soccer thugs, skinheads, and neo-Nazis. Its leadership comes from the British National Party, which is a neo-fascist party in Great Britain that's whites only. And Geller has fundraised for this group and said she wished she could be at their rallies, especially a rally they had for another ally of hers in Europe, Geert Wilders, the Dutch neo-fascist politician, who is called Islam a retarded religion, called for a head rag tax on Muslim women, and attempted to introduce legislation to ban the Quran, because he says the Quran has totalitarian ideas in it, so he's going to act like a totalitarian. And so we see that this network in the United States, which is still relatively small but has an enormous megaphone, draws its inspiration from Europe, and it also draws a lot of inspiration, as I point out, from Israel. As Pam Geller told the New York Times, she said, Israel is a very good guide because, like I said, in the war between the civilized man and the savage, you side with the civilized man. And actually, Geller and her working partner, Robert Spencer, who's funded to the tune of $1 million by the millionaire I mentioned earlier, Aubrey Chernick, attempted to buy billboards in Seattle that would have contained that exact slogan.
Wow, it really is like Alice in Wonderland, Bizarro World. Like, we made the choice to abandon reason a while back or something, and now here we are. You know, it really is amazing. Because you're talking about people who basically are like, you know, the comments section at Little Green Footballs from a few years back, and now they're the intellectual leadership of the right wing and the Republican Party, you know?
I can tell you, no one's really stood up against this campaign. As I said, Barack Obama said very little. He practically said nothing about it. He backpedaled on his defense about the defense of the Islamic Community Center, Part 51 at Ground Zero. And there have been few articles I've written in the past few years that have gotten this much attention. And I think it's because people are sick of this, this atmosphere that these activists have been trying to cultivate, and they want to learn more about it and stand up against it because they find it to be completely un-American.
Yeah, right on. Well, that's the only silver lining to all this is a lot of people start shaking their head and saying, now, wait a minute, you know, whatever happened to the whole we'll never let that happen here thing that we all thought we believed in or something? You know,
yeah,
we're going down a path that's been tread before us, and we know where it leads.
Yep, I mean, this is just the latest scapegoat, too. I mean, I think we have to believe it'll go away. But, I mean, every other group that's been scapegoated has been, has experienced so much damage and destruction. African Americans, gays, and this is just the latest group, and I don't think it's over yet.
Yeah, well, you know, here's the thing. The obvious truth is just right there for anyone, even the most narrow-minded. Yesterday was a racist idiot kind of person to behold, and that is that it's the people with the power against the rest of us. It's the bazillionaires, not even the billionaires, but the people with the tens of billions of dollars. Those people control the state, and they're our enemy, and it's all of us against them. It's not the weakest. It's not illegal aliens and a couple of million, two or three million Muslims in America that are, you know, weakening us and destroying us. It's the people who are in control. I mean, how could anybody deny the obvious truth of that? How we got here, you know?
So you have to look at this Islamophobic network and understand how it benefits power. And the first benefit is what I said earlier, that it supports empire because it creates the fantasy of a menace from within,
right?
That we're fighting thousands of miles away. But the second benefit, and this is more to the Republican frontrunners, is it distracts from economic issues and it divides people who might otherwise form a coalition against the oligarchs and against the powerful. We saw it in the Deep South, what the oligarchs did to divide African Americans and poor whites by labeling Martin Luther King a communist agitator. And we're seeing it again with people like Mike Huckabee and Sarah Palin attempting to distract from the fact that their economic policies helped get regular people into the mess that they're in. And so let's talk about Sharia law instead and worry about the Statue of Liberty being draped in a burqa.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, listen, man, you do really great work, Max. I always enjoy reading what you write and talking with you on the show. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, everybody, that's Max Blumenthal. He is a fellow at the Nation Institute. He's the author of the book Republican Gomorrah, and he's got this excellent piece under Tom Englehart's archive at antiwar.com, The Great Fear. You can also find that at tomdispatch.com. His website is maxblumenthal.com, and we'll be right back with Juan Cole after this.